Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Daniel Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity today. Jim is over at CPAC. Not sure if he busted out a sweater vest for Rick Santorum's speech to CPAC this morning, but either way, he had little elbow room if he was at that speech. But Rick Santorum, not the good martini today. The good martini comes to us from one of Jim's favorite political figures, in fact, and that is New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. And Dan, you may remember that Mitt Romney dominated the Florida primary on January 31st, and then immediately the next morning on CNN, metaphorically punched himself in the face by basically saying he didn't care about the very rich, and most harmful to him, didn't care about the very poor. Asked to clarify, he said it again, saying that there's a safety net for those people, and if it needs mending, I'll deal with that. But I'm really not concerned about them. He wants to focus on building back up the middle class. Well, apparently, Mr. Romney could use some advice from one of his most ardent supporters, and that's Governor Christie up in New Jersey, who had the chance to fire back at a union president, the head of the New Jersey Educators Association, Mr. Giordano is his name. Last weekend on the New Jersey Capital Report program, Mr. Giordano was asked by the host about the merits of school vouchers, basically saying you have all these poor kids in schools. Why can't the state help parents get these kids into better schools by rerouting that money? And here's how that exchange went.
Why shouldn't that person, those parents, have the same options to be able to get the kid out of a failing school and into one that works with the help of the state?
Those parents should have exactly the same options, and they do. We don't say that you can't take your kid out of the public school. We would argue not, and we would say let's work more closely and
they
more
can't
harmoniously.
They can't afford, you know that. Some of these parents can't afford to take the kids out of the
school. Life's not always fair, and I'm sorry about that.
A lot of compassion there from the left. Dan, here's Chris Christie more recently reacting to all that.
An outrageous statement. I cannot express how disgusted I am by that statement by the head of the largest teachers union in our state. But I also have to tell you, I'm not the least bit surprised, because I think it so succinctly captures what their position, their real position is. Not the position they put on their slick 30-second ads when they say every child should have a great education. Well, they mean every child except for the ones in the failing school districts who shouldn't have a choice.
Not only is that a great explanation, Dan, but it's also a great issue, I think, for conservatives in general, whether it's the D.C. vouchers program or whatever. What Mitt Romney fumbled around trying to say, and even what he was trying to say is not all that appealing to conservatives, because he basically endorsed the safety net rather than trying to get the government out of the way and build these people up. Chris Christie's right on message here.
This is a winning issue, I think, for conservatives. Not only is it a winning issue, but I think education, and I've always said this, educational policy, especially post No Child Left Behind, the good in that and the bad in that, and there's plenty of bad, is an issue on which I think there's been a straight up and down policy fight between the forces of the left and the forces of the right, and the right has won. I mean, it's one of those few areas where I think, you're starting to see in D.C., in New York City, with some of these charter schools and the policies and the Canadas of the world. I don't mean the country, I mean the education reformer. This is an issue where I think conservatives won. And Christie had that great line about the slick 30-second ads. That's right. The genius of Christie is that he's got a thick enough skin that he absorbed the initial money bomb that the educational establishment and the union establishment dumped over his head, and he kept fighting. And once you get through kind of the cloud of smoke that all that union money can create, this is an issue on which he's exactly right. And it does tie to the Romney comment about the poor, because it's a classic school choice, is a classic equality of opportunity issue, and not equality of outcome necessarily, but equality of opportunity, which is what conservatives are for and what liberals should be for. I mean, liberals ideally are for equality of opportunity and equality of outcome. We know how messy that gets, but this is a classic equality of opportunity issue, and I'm glad to see someone as articulate as Governor Christie pushing hard for it.
On to martini number two now, and Dan and I are recording this just a little bit before President Obama is making an accommodation on his policy of birth control, contraception, morning after pill, and mandating that through the Obamacare program and the Health and Human Services Department, basically saying now that religious institutions don't need to be paying for that, they don't need to cover that, we're going to make the insurance companies do it. So more class warfare, basically deciding to pretend like he's on the side of these institutions. institutions and trying to soak the rich in another way. But in the end, Dan, I'm just not sure how stupid he thinks we are, but this isn't really that difficult. If you add more items to coverage, that coverage will cost more. The president says that it won't cost more, but these insurance companies have to make up the difference somewhere. They won't specifically charge you for that, but they'll have to raise rates for other stated reasons and across the board. So all of us end up getting soaked just a little bit more because of what the president is trying to pull off here with a little bit of sleight of hand. Hopefully not too many people are buying it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the same problem that we run into with the Hyde Amendment and with the various both legal and procedural blocks to public funding for abortion at the federal level, which is that money is fungible. You can't gate off this $100 from that $100. And so I don't think that this is much of a compromise. Ed Whalen on our Bench Memos blog at NRO said that there's really only one compromise, and it's not a compromise at all. It's that somebody who has religious objections or deeply held beliefs against providing certain forms of birth control, and especially against providing agents that induce abortions, should not be required to do so. The thing that none of us are saying, because I think the particular instance of the violation of conscience is so egregious, that none of us are really saying, how did we get here? How did we get to the point where an independently selected, you know, quote-unquote independent board of medical experts is advising the president, who then unilaterally makes the decision that birth control is, quote, essential care that employers have to provide if they provide any insurance at all? I mean, that the real issue is that we have a federal government and an executive branch that can make these decisions at will. But in this case, that power was used to violate the religious conscience of you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Catholics in this country. So, you know, Russ Douthat points out there's 70 million Catholics in this country, even if only 10% of them feel strongly enough about the church's teachings on contraception, then you're still talking about 7 million Americans whose religious liberty has been violated here. So it's not much of a compromise at all, and I really hope that it doesn't stick, because, you know, this is how liberalism works. They get you to give just a little, and then the next time the compromise is more, and then the next time you give a little bit more, and eventually, you know, it's hard to recognize where you started out.
We mentioned yesterday that if you don't really care about this issue, chances are they'll mandate something else that you do care about down the road. And if that mandate comes after Election Day 2012 and he's reelected, guess how much they're going to care about how much you don't like that mandate. Dan, you know, when we move on to martini number three now, often we don't have very serious issues here, but there's obviously a lot of concern about a nuclear Iran. There's concern about the existential threat of Israel, but there's an issue that trumps all of that. And it's a good thing that people have gotten together in Israel to raise the concern about this, because I think people need to consider this, particularly Prime Minister Netanyahu and other officials in Israel. Apparently, Madonna has a concert in Tel Aviv on May 29th, so there is now a group that is forming a Facebook page entitled "Bibi, Don't Start a War with Iran Until After Madonna's Show on May 29th. And this story comes from Haaretz, and here's my favorite part of the story. While the currently relatively unpopulated Facebook page could seem like a case of dealing with trivialities in the face of an all-out war with Iran, Israeli Madonna fans' fears are not unsubstantiated, with a distinguished list of artists bailing out on Israeli shows in the last minute over political crises and wars. I'm pretty sure that's still trivial in the face of annihilation from a nuclear Iran dam. I'm not really sure that they have a valid point there.
You know what, Greg? I'm going to come down on the side of these loyal Madonna fans here. Look, it's hard enough to live day in and day out in Tel Aviv under, as you said, the constant threat of annihilation and, you know, basically the universal hatred of all of your neighbors. It's hard to be an Israeli, and I think they need their entertainments. And entertainment is a very serious matter if you're living under, you know, the threat of, you know, the specter of war, not just now, but pretty much all the time. So I think, you know what, if an accommodation can be made, if Netanyahu can battle plan in such a way that allows Madonna to come and perform, well, that'd be great. The alternative is she goes out and performs on the front lines. You know, maybe Madonna. how awesome would it be if Madonna performed in the streets of Tehran? Wouldn't that, you know, maybe Tehran by spring?
That'd be a really good reality. I can only imagine Netanyahu making a formal statement declaring that a strike would come at May 30th at the earliest. Not quite sure this has reached his radar screen, but it reached ours. And Dan, I think it's a particularly crazy way to end the week. So thanks so much for filling in for Jim, and have a great weekend.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster is news editor at National Review Online, filling in for Jim Garrity today. Jim will be back on Monday. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.